Hey, friends. So Facebook started this supporter option for creators on Facebook, and they reached out to us and asked us to try it out. And we have, and it's super fun.
Dude, it's been amazing. All this content that, you know, we always want to do anyways, but now we really get to do it and share it with our supporters. It's exclusive content.
It is.
You know, I do a Motivation Monday. You do Thirsty Thursday.
Yep. We share backstage stuff from tours. We shared a poolside chat that we had in a pool in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, it was hot.
Just stuff like that. And, you know, we try to give out a lot of content across social media. But there are some folks, some of you lovely folks that, you know, want more. And so this is for people that want to see more behind the scenes stuff, more lifestyle stuff, more things that are just kind of in the recesses of our brains.
Yeah,
that
we just released a song for supporters,
so,
which is amazing.
Supporters are the first to see it. Supporters get a permanent discount on Stone Cold and the Jackal merchandise. They get to be part of a private supporter group so that they can all talk to each other and talk with us. There are so many benefits to being a supporter. And if you're so inclined, we'd love to have you.
Yeah, go check it out on our Facebook page. There's a blue button. Click Become a Supporter and check out our new song. That's awesome.
That's awesome. Oh, dude, that's awesome.
That's really awesome.
With Stephen Bradford. Stevie B!
Bradford A!
What's going on?
What's up, dude?
Dude, so today's Monday.
Monday.
So we had a really good time yesterday?
Yesterday, Sunday, we were at the Burbank Comedy Festival.
I mean,
man, it was a little stressful getting to the point,
guys,
of the show.
Yeah, we're gonna let you in on a little secret here. We were a little terrified.
Yeah, it was going. It was not going as planned.
Yes. But normally we plan things at least a couple months in advance.
At least. You know. Now we're so far ahead. You know, we have November dates.
Sure,
we're working on 2020 now.
Yeah.
But usually you want to give yourself at least like 6 weeks.
Right. To let everybody know.
Yeah,
that coming,
because
right?
Everybody's not always on
There's
Twitter.
There's not
or social
one
media.
Place that everybody looks to
yeah,
find
so
out.
Yeah. So you got to go everywhere and blanket it, and especially in LA at home. You know, kind of a hometown show for us. But LA's a fickle place when it comes to entertainment, because there's
a lot to do.
There's a lot to do and choose from.
Right.
And who wants to see Dumb and Dumber at a comedy show?
Yeah.
So
on Sunday at 3 p.m.
Yeah. But we did kick off the Burbank Comedy Festival.
Yeah, it was.
Which is really cool, because at Flappers in Burbank, they have this comedy festival and they have classes during the day. They
it's
have
cool.
stand up at night, and they have all these different acts and all this stuff. And it's like a week packed full of comedy.
I know. We should maybe go to some of the classes.
Yeah. For free.
I mean,
please,
yeah.
Please let us.
We have a lanyard.
Please.
I have some credentials
here. We do now. Yeah.
I have some credentials.
They're like, they come back. I go, can we take the classes?
Yeah, right.
They're like, no.
Yeah.
So, but it was amazing. We had a lot of people from work come for the first time.
It was really cool.
Hair, you know, people from hair makeup.
Well, because I mean, for anybody that, as you might imagine, even if you haven't seen our show, a lot of the comedy that we do, the quote unquote comedy that we do, is based on our experiences here at General Hospital. So some of the other people that work here that have been here for many years can surely appreciate some of the viewpoints that we have.
Oh, yeah. And it was fun. It was a great show. It ended up being a great show.
It was so fun.
We had fun. Great room,
yes,
by the way.
Thank you to everybody that came. It was so much fun.
Thank you to Flappers and,
and the Comedy
Barbara
Festival.
And Josh and Randy, everybody there. Brian, who kind of made it happen. George Pinocchio helped us out. George, thank you for that.
KABC.
So, you know, it was cool. It was, you know, we had literally 8 days to sell tickets.
Yeah.
8 days. Because the first 3 days, there was something wrong. The link worked, but the shopping cart didn't.
Well,
and we had some problems. And we rectified that problem. But I lost 3 days of marketing.
You know, guys, like, one of the things when you get invited to something like this, you want to show well. You want people to show up so that they're like, oh, people like these guys, right?
Who are these guys?
So, you know, making sure that there were people in the room was something that was important to us, because, gosh, you know, otherwise it's not a show.
No, it's not. It's a show
so
for us.
So we're so grateful that people came out.
Thank you to our faithfuls that came out,
absolutely.
You know, I know
that it probably there were some people there, our faithfuls, as you say, that have probably seen most of the things we did in the show, seen it at one point or another. Thank you for laughing, even if you knew what was coming.
Yeah. Well, we do. I mean, the good thing is there's a lot of improv that we do.
Oh, yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Because we do. We came up with something, a Timmy T song.
I'm not sure that's something we should keep.
No, we're not. But what's scary is that we both sang it at the same time. That was so weird, man. I felt like
super old
and connected. <Yeah. laughs> I felt so connected to
you. I had that song on a tape.
Love Timmy T.
Well, do you remember this?
Come on.
Remember when you could go to a tape store or a record store and buy?
I don't
just
think they were called tape stores. But
you could buy the single, and it usually
it was in a cardboard sleeve
yes. instead of like a plastic case.
Yeah.
And it was like $2.99.
It was amazing.
And you could get the single, and it might have another song on it too.
Yeah.
But I had one more try on that singles tape. And,
dude, the best is when you'd play it so much, the letters would start to kind of rub off.
Man, I love that song.
Oh, it was amazing.
Thank you, Timmy T.
For bringing us some joy yesterday.
Oh, man.
It was a great show. We had a lot of fun. Burbank's going to be amazing. We're hitting the road September.
Yep, September 21st, my 40th birthday.
That's right. You have to keep reminding me because I will forget.
We are going to be in Indianapolis at the – I think it's called the Helium Club.
The Helium, yeah.
The 21st, and then the next day, the 22nd, we'll be in Cincinnati. And then October
– don't know the dates, but it's on StoneColdAndTheJackal.com because I have to go there frequently to remind ourselves of what we're doing.
We're doing Tacoma, Washington, and Portland, Oregon in a weekend, which is really fun.
We've never done the Northwest like that. So
well, we've played Seattle.
Yeah, we played Seattle, but it was kind of in a hotel banquet.
It wasn't
room.
Kind of in a hotel. It was in a hotel. It was before we had relationships with a lot of these comedy clubs.
Yeah.
And so we just rented out a ballroom in a hotel, and my sister lives there and was gracious enough to help us.
Jeremy
and my sister. Because there was no staff there, right? A lot of these clubs.
Jeremy made the announcement.
Oh, yeah. Jeremy did the pre-show announcement and was like, these guys are worthless without you guys. They are absolutely nothing.
Dude, I don't know what he was possessed with. They know they are absolutely nothing without you.
Worthless.
And here they are.
Hunks of crap.
But here they are.
Stone Cold and the Jackal.
Dude, at least we can look back and laugh at these shows.
Oh, my gosh.
Because, I mean, we did, you know, you just do it.
Yeah, we wanted to play Seattle, and there wasn't a club that could have us, so we made our own club.
But
this time we have a club. It's in Tacoma. And then, then we'll go to Portland, and then in November – we're playing Detroit and Nashville.
Okay, so Detroit people, what up?
You rock.
First of all, we're almost sold out. So if you're waiting, don't wait because we actually tried to add a second show and they can't because they have two more shows that night. So they couldn't.
God, it's so funny. Everyone
couldn't staff it. So don't wait if you're waiting Detroit. Get your tickets now because it will be sold out. Probably within the next couple weeks.
It's amazing. Max. You know, people have always said, come play Detroit, and we always wanted to play.
Yeah.
We just didn't have a venue to do it at.
Now we do.
And now we
Comedy
do.
Castle.
I've always wanted to perform in a castle.
I don't know if it is.
Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle? That's a long name for a club. I think that's what it's called.
Is it? I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're going to be there, and we are excited about you guys being so excited to have us.
Yeah, Detroit's a great town.
Yeah, and then Nashville that weekend, too, and we always love playing Zanies in Nashville.
Nashville, too.
Tickets are on our website, StoneColdAndTheJackal.com, and click on Tour Dates and Appearances. They're all there. We're having a great time doing those live. The live show is just so much fun for us. We're so grateful that we get to do it.
Yeah.
Awesome. But speaking of things that we're grateful to get to do, we have a fun guest.
We do have a fun guest today. We have the most wanted
man. In a lot. That word takes on so many different meanings
when
we talk about this guy.
There's a few different meanings for it, but he is the most wanted man in the world right now.
I mean,
it is amazing. And I was able to coax him into coming into my room.
Right. He didn't feel,
who is this guy?
Well, he didn't feel unsafe being here. That's amazing.
No, he didn't feel unsafe.
Yeah.
We have Kobe.
What's up, everybody?
So, dude, you have a three-part name, or is it?
I do. I do have a three-part name. I am Kobe Ryan McLaughlin.
Okay.
McLaughlin. Okay.
So yes. is that a union thing, or is that a Kobe thing?
No, it's a Kobe thing.
Yeah.
Actually, no, it's a little bit of both. So when I went to go sign up for SAG, there was already a Kobe McLaughlin. So yeah. I was.
It's always, because I had to sign up as we talked about this a little bit, yeah. I had to be Stephen J., because I'm Jack Stephen,
uh-huh.
But there was already a Steve and a Jack, so I had to be Stephen J. Burton.
No way.
It's so funny, I know.
That's how you became you.
That's, I guess. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Like, when you first started, were you ever Jack?
No.
No, okay.
No,
yeah.
But we checked and said,
right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So that's your full name, Kobe Ryan.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, there's so much to talk about, okay? Because, first of all, you are doing an amazing job. First, I'm going to start with that. Amazing
yes.
job on the show, dude.
Thank you, brother.
No, seriously, it's really difficult to do what you're doing and to do it so well and be so fearless. I just want to say that first.
Absolutely.
Because there's not many people who've come on the show who has been such a great bad guy, you know, and that's tough to do. And it's always not the most fun thing to do for actors, you know, because they, you know, as actors, yeah. you want people to like you. And if you're on a show, you want fans to like you. And you know, like, you're doing such a phenomenal job in the same thing we told to Chloe.
Yeah.
Who played Nell, right? So you're doing an amazing job, dude, first and foremost. And I know people out there don't know you and they just know Shiloh and they want Shiloh to die and kill Shiloh, kill Shiloh. It's all I freaking hear. But I'm like, no, Kobe's a good dude, man. He's really good at his job. That's why you hate him so much. This guy is so good at doing this. So yeah. Kudos to you, first and foremost. I want to just say that because we've talked about it, obviously, but – you're doing a fantastic job.
Oh, brother, that makes me feel so good. Thank you so much for that, brother. I mean, yeah. it's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's a lot of fun working with you, especially because I get to bounce off you. And, you know, I mean, yeah. as actors, you're only as good as your partner.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. so it
a lot of times.
It
a
makes
times.
My job super easy. So yeah. I really appreciate that, man.
So,
thank you so much.
So what I mean, not, we're talking about the show anyway. So what was it like coming on to the show? I mean, for you, because you've worked, you've done a lot of stuff for years. You've been here for a long time, right uh-huh. in L.A.?
Yeah.
You're the overnight success now, as they call it.
Yeah, 25 years in.
Yeah, right.
Started 25 years in. But what was it like? What was it like coming to, you know, daytime? Did you have any kind of stigmas of, oh, no, it's a daytime show? Because a lot of us did when we started. We were like, I ain't auditioning for a soap opera. But how did that come? How did that come about?
Well, you know, I was like that. I was approached a couple of times earlier in my career to do this, and I didn't particularly want to go down that road. I didn't really know much about it, but I had gotten to a point where I was like, well, I'll give it a. It was the point of least resistance, and it just presented itself to me. So I was like, well, I've never done anything like this. I was looking for a challenge, and it was incredibly intimidating.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I have never been so afraid
I know.
Of doing anything before, and it was...
Are you talking about the role or the
just this. This
genre.
Beast.
This machine.
Yeah.
Anybody, I mean, as if, you know, for the actors listening out there,
yeah.
I mean, you never... I thought that this was going to be like what my career was mostly comprised of, and it's totally different. This is a totally different beast than anything that I have ever done, and it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. It's been wonderful. It's taken me completely out of my comfort zone and been everything that I'd asked for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know I remember the first day when I came into your your dressing room.
Yeah, right? I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. So he had a bunch of – he had a – dude, I mean, talk about throwing in the fire. This dude had like 50 pages. And he was just walking around like, oh, man, I don't even know how I'm going to do this.
Right.
And you had scenes with – it was – I don't know if it was – M, no, it was Lexi and Kelly.
Yeah,
right.
He had scenes with them, and they were getting ready, and they couldn't run lines with them.
Yeah, Burton walked in,
and I'm like, dude, I know you. I see you
come
walking around like freaking Walking Dead.
Somebody help me!
I'm like, let's just run this stuff. Let's just run it.
Oh, dude,
you know, and he's like, oh, okay, cool. So let's just run it. And you know, obviously, you're a great actor. So, but like you said, it's a different animal.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
You're coming in like, here's your 60 pages. Good luck.
Yeah, and then go. Go. Go.
Well, and also, you know, when you're coming in playing the character that you're playing, you want to assert yourself in a certain way. You want to make sure that you are putting out there what is going to make you earn stuff later too, right? Like when you're coming on that specific character, you want to start the way you want to start it. So that's a lot of pressure too, right?
And not be really kind of a deer in headlights.
Right.
Which we are, right?
You have to be a commanding presence. You have to be – so, like, you want to make – not only do you have to make sure you get all the lines right, but the making sure you have the right balance of character, too. That's a lot to consider, too.
Well, you know what I found really interesting about this is that they take so much time to establish this individual, right?
Yeah.
And then you get so little time to actually execute it. So along the course of this, the arc of this character, I mean, this guy started as something fairly completely different in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easier for me to grab a hold of that. Yeah. If this guy would have started as a big of a bastard as he is, right, you know, from the get-go, it would have been a little more difficult. But I had time to kind of make choices in what I wanted to do. And when I originally looked at this guy, I was like, well, he's not a bad guy. So I'm not going to play him like a bad guy.
Sure.
Bad guys don't think they're bad guys, right?
Exactly.
And that's great. And how you played it. Whether they changed the arc or whatever, I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know what their plan was, but how you've navigated it has been great. It's been really fun to watch because, you know, people know people who listen to our podcast know that actors get thrown into the fire. This is not a joke. Like, this is a test. You know,
no.
Because back in the day when I started in 91, we would do 20 scenes a day. And we would go from the same time, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
You go later, yeah.
Yeah, later. And now we have 70 scenes, and we're done earlier. So it's just like, especially for someone new who comes in, who's working every day, who has to have 50, 60 pages a day sometimes. I mean, it's just like you're thrown in it, dude.
Well, man, you know, once you do this, there's nothing you can't do. This is like Navy SEAL training for actors.
Yeah.
This game.
Yeah, it truly is, dude.
You know, and
it truly is.
I was asking Fido, one of the directors, and I said, hey, you know, did you ever consider doing multicam or you know, episodic? And he's like, no, I did it, and it's boring, and they move way too slow. I would never want to. No. No.
Isn't that amazing?
Once you get used to the pace, it's hard to sit around and wait for anything else. Like, there's no other medium that even comes close to the kind of pace that we do.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, no. And kudos to you guys, Steve. I can't believe you've been doing this since 1991.
Yeah, crazy.
That is insane. Do you still enjoy the process as much now as you did then?
Man, you know, we move so fast sometimes where you're just hoping to get something in a scene. You know what I mean? If you're doing 20 scenes in a day, you're just hoping to get a couple moments out of there somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it just feels like sometimes you're just delivering information, which a lot of times we are. Mm-hmm. But, I love it for that reason. It's those moments that you get. Like, if we do a scene and there's a moment that we're not expecting, that's what we do it for. That's what I do it for, you know?
Right.
I love it still. Obviously, we're doing other stuff creatively because that's what I think is really important for people, and I know you sing and play music, which is great, but for us, it's now we're going out on the road doing these shows. It helps my creative process here. It keeps it fresh also,
sure,
which is nice. You know, I never really had that before. I never had another outlet.
Yeah,
you know,
sure,
to do that.
Yeah.
We did some music stuff, but the process, it is what it is. You just have to recognize and know what it is.
Yeah.
Because it's hard not to get frustrated sometimes, you know, because we all take our job very seriously. And if they just take a take that, because we got to go and they got to take a take, and you're like, oh man, that's so, you know, like we were just joking with Maurice in the hallway. He said something like, he had a line, something about, someone's got to testify. He goes, and someone's got to testify. And I look at him and they took it. Then they're like, move it on. We're like, what? He said tetify. What are you doing?
Well, I have a little trick for that. If I'm feeling like I'm really off, I'll mess up in the middle of a take and just stop.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how much it pisses off the producers.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because totally you have to stop some, the truck, sometimes yeah. you have sometimes you have to sometimes you have to do that.
Yeah, it's true.
Know? It's just the nature of the beast here, man.
Well, it's funny. Like for a while, you know, on single cam stuff, a lot of times when you mess up, you just take a beat and start again because they can edit around it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, some people do that here. If they're coming from single cam, they'll do that.
I got yelled at the first time that happened. They're like, Kobe, you have to stop. And I was like, gee, what?
Yeah, the voice of God, yeah.
I know.
But for a while, that, like, there was like a little stretch where they were allowing people to do it. And I wondered where that went.
Yeah, sometimes they allow, I don't know, it's weird. It's the process changed a little bit.
Yeah.
Because now we won't do a full countdown. We'll just pick up and go action.
Right.
And say it, which we never said action before ever.
Sure.
You know, now we're saying action. It's kind of odd. But you've done a ton of episodic, mm-hmm. right, and single camera stuff. So I did some, but I didn't do a lot. I grew up on the show here. And then I go to do single cam, and I don't even – so I do a take. I'm doing The Last Castle. I do a take, and I was like, oh, that's like – I go – and I go, cut.
Oh, right.
You said that?
Yeah.
What they say?
The director just goes – you don't say cut.
Yeah, right.
And I said, okay, can I do that again? He's like, yeah, just don't cut. Just don't stop.
just
do the line 10 times, however you want to do it.
Right.
Okay, great, thanks. So it's like you saying, you know, like you're just going to keep doing your takes. They're like, hey, dude, that's not how it goes here. Okay.
But nobody tells you that.
No, nobody.
No idea.
You got, yeah, there are some, it sets you up for some embarrassing moments, for sure. But hey, we're actors. We're used to embarrassing moments, right?
Oh, hey, I live for embarrassing moments because that's where a lot of truth lives.
Absolutely.
It's true.
You're right.
So, dude, where are you from?
I'm from here, man.
You're from here, California.
I'm from here. I was born in Southern California.
Wow.
I was born in the Valley. I was raised in the
Midwest.
Yeah, Chicago, Missouri is where I grew up.
Okay.
So you're born in the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah.
What family situations made you guys go to the Midwest?
Well, I was raised by my mom and my stepdad, and my stepdad was in the he was in the restaurant business. So the corporate restaurant world.
Super stable,
and moved everywhere. Like we went all over the Midwest, and it was super cool. It allowed me to. It was neat to grow up in a time period, in a place where that you could be a kid.
Yeah,
oh, sure.
There was no social media. There was no none of that stuff.
Yeah,
and I had acres to run around and just get lost.
I know.
Is there one place? You know. So how?
Yeah. What was the time frame?
When did you move away from Southern California?
So I left Southern California in the early 80s. Late 70s, 78, we moved to Illinois.
You were pretty young.
Yeah,
okay,
I was a baby. And then we came back. We came back in 89, and my old man opened a restaurant here, and we were here for a couple more years up in Santa Barbara and in Santa Clarita.
Wow.
And then I headed out my senior year of high school to Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And spent my senior year there and did a couple years at Penn State.
Nice.
And came back in the early 90s.
What does home mean to you? Like, when you think of home as a kid?
That's a great question.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what... Is there one place that you connect to, or is it just the people, or what?
I think that Missouri and Illinois.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was in Missouri, when I was in my 10, 11, 12, 13.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the time when you make those, you know, those friends. And I still keep in touch with some of those people.
Yeah.
And then Pennsylvania, you know. And now living here, I mean, this is my home base.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's funny because every time I leave it to go work or to go on vacation, I always love coming back to it, no matter how much I'm like, oh, Christ, I can't wait to get out of this place. And then
I know.
All of a sudden I'm like, oh, I can't wait to sit in traffic and breathe smog. Get me back.
Yeah. So Pennsylvania in high school, it was your senior year of high school?
Yeah.
So when did the thing start turning to like, I might go to Penn State, when did theater or acting come into your life?
Well, my real father was a production sound mixer.
Oh, okay, cool.
So this was the family business. My entire family is in this business, behind the camera, below the line.
Wow.
And that's how I got my start in this business. I started cleaning camera cases on a show called Burke's Law.
That's awesome.
Yeah, my uncle got me a gig just to come in for the summer.
Love that.
And it was great. And I did that, man. I humped. I'd get the DP drinks and shit and book the first AC plane tickets. And that's how I started.
And that was after college or that was when?
That was after college.
Okay, so you didn't know. When
no
you were
idea.
At Penn State, what were you studying?
Drinking.
Yeah. That's what I was just saying.
Partying.
Beer.
Yeah. I got a BA in bourbon.
Dude. Yeah, right.
You're at Penn State, dude.
Oh, dude.
I'll
that's
drink
all
a lot
you
of
do.
Beer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. State College, that's a fun town, though, for that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Wow. Okay, so you did 2 years, and you were like, you know what? This isn't for me. I'm going to go back to L.A.?
No. Well, my family moved.
Okay.
And we came back to Southern California. And I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do. So I got a job working at a restaurant. As you know, it's like I started living the actor's life before I was even an actor.
Right.
And the acting coach who used to coach everybody here, yeah. John Holmo.
Oh,
his
yeah.
name.
Yeah.
So John would walk into the establishment that I was a host in, and we started shooting the shit one day, and he asked me what I was doing and what I wanted to do, and I told him I wanted to be an actor, and he asked me why. And I said,
amazing,
and he goes,
dude.
He goes, stop. He goes, Cope, don't answer that question.
Oh, no, this is good. I like this.
Think about it. And I'm going to come back, and he goes, I'm going to ask you again in a week, and if you give me the right answer, you can come to class. And I thought about it. And I thought, that's what I want to do with my life. This is it. This is it. This is what I want to devote my life to. And I told him that in so many words. I went to his class, and now here I am.
20
years later.
Where he taught.
Where
a
he
lot
taught.
Of us. Yeah.
Literally right down the hallway from the old room I used to
yeah,
come in
yeah,
and audition.
Three doors
oh, that's
down.
Right. He used to
yeah,
be kind yeah. of in like in residence here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. He was here for a long time. Yeah, he would take – well, he helped me a lot, but he would take – the new people on the show,
sure,
the
yeah.
younger, usually the younger
yeah,
kids,
yeah, yeah.
and help them, you know, just help them.
Sure.
And it was a great asset, John was, man.
Oh, he was great. He was a trip. And that's what started this whole crazy business off for me.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
great, dude.
And this line of work, yeah. It's insane.
So what would you remember, like, once you made that transition and made that decision, ah, I'm gonna do this, I'm going to get my tutelage from this crazy guy. What do you remember the turning point? When did you, like, what was your first job that meant
yeah,
something to you?
Yeah, I did a show for MTV called Undressed, where
oh, yeah.
a lot of people came off of, and it was 1999, and I was working as a bartender.
Yeah.
And I remember going to this audition, and I did it, and then producers were like, hey, can you stay for producers? I was like, yeah, yeah, sure, sure. So I stayed for producers, and I was about to leave. They're like, no, we're going to test you. And I didn't even know what that meant. I'm
sure.
like, okay. So I was calling my manager. I was like, yo, I'm not going to be able to make the four. I can't come in at four, dude. And he's like, you know, all pissed. I'm like, I can't leave. And I ended up staying there. I missed my shift. I got in a lot of trouble.
Right.
But I ended up getting the show.
Wow.
So I did the show. And once I saw it, we all watched it. It was one of those, you know, you're 20 and you're with
yeah,
all your
like,
buddies and your
yeah.
girlfriend and you have a watching viewing party.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
we watched it. And I watched myself do that. And I was like, that's it. I'm never going to work in a restaurant again. I went that week. I quit.
Wow.
And I was done. And I was like, I'm an actor.
How many episodes were interested
was
did
then,
you do?
Was
like
that,
five.
Okay.
Was it scripted?
Yeah.
It was scripted. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. It was crazy. It was actually kind of like this. There was zero time, and it was just like, go.
Yeah.
So
yeah, here
but,
it is.
Yeah, but five episodes, I thought, wow, I made it.
Yeah.
Isn't that wow, the best? I'm going to be on People.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, that's right. I remember that show, and a lot of people... Because it lasted for a while, too, right?
Yeah, it went on for a minute. Like,
yeah.
it went on for a couple seasons longer than
yeah.
it probably should have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
funny.
All right, yeah. So and then you just started.
That was it. And
yeah.
and I
you
just kept going, man. And I stayed in class, and I busted my ass. And I got, you know, I would ask friends for favors, and I did everything. I did everything that young actors are supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know?
That's good.
And it just kind of snowballed.
Yeah,
you know, and things got bigger, and you get on a roll, and then you, yeah. you know, you hit, and then you
work
for a while,
work.
And you don't, and then
yep.
you work, and then you don't, and it's, yeah, it's just that thing.
And so now that's 20-something years of that cycle. Right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
You know, I always used to say it's a marathon, not a sprint, and then
yeah.
it's an act of attrition. And now that I'm in my 40s and I've been doing it for 20 years, I'm like, holy shit! Like I better listen to my own advice. This is it.
This is it.
I got no other. I'm not qualified to do anything else.
So I know. I remember we were walking up the stairs. He goes, man, I don't know what I'd be doing if I wasn't doing this. One day, that's what he said to me. He goes, I don't know what I'd be doing.
I really don't.
I go, I do. No.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Well, so within that, is it the opportunity for new work that gives you passion? What are the things that
well, how do you find this? The question is, how do you find stability?
There is no stability
in between that. Right.
There is none. I think it's just owning the fact that this is what we signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, I was reading this article Once Upon a Time in Hollywood after it came out. Bruce Dern took over Burt Reynolds' role as George Spawn. And they were asking Bruce Dern when he was going to retire. And he said, I'm never going to retire. He goes, as an actor, you never know when that career-defining role is right around
that's
the corner.
That's true. Yeah.
You never
that's
know.
That's true. Yeah.
And that's the ultimate motivator
yeah.
is just
you're
to
right.
stay in the game and stay sharp.
You got
to
stay yeah. in the game.
And work begets work, so it doesn't matter what you're doing.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but like, you know, I know you have a daughter.
Yeah.
Right? How old is she?
She's turning 9.
Oh, she's
oh,
so
wow,
cute.
Man.
Isn't it the best?
Yeah, it's insane.
Isn't it the best?
It's so incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, we're all dads.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You're dad too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have two little girls and my oldest is 8.
Ah, so you know.
I know some stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
We know Peppa Pig.
Oh, are you kidding? I get Peppa Pig t-shirts.
Oh, and Pinkalicious. But, we're watching Pinkalicious.
That's my Wi-Fi name, by the way, in my house. Pinkalicious. You come in Pinkalicious. That's the name of my Wi-Fi.
But, you know, because there is instability in doing what we do. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to, you know, be here for a long time. I did go out there for a while, but like what keeps you, what's your routine? Because you work out, you play music. Mm-hmm. What's that kind of stuff that allows you to not be so hyper focused on, okay, when's the phone going to ring? You know what I mean? Because a lot of actors are like, when's the next thing? What am I doing?
save your money. There's a lot. I have to really discipline myself. My house is really clean.
Yeah. That's your therapy?
Dude, yeah, that ain't in therapy.
Yeah. But, that and therapy. I go to therapy, then I vacuum.
It's right. Not too far from the truth.
I know my dad, dude. That's what he would do. Yeah. He was a vacuum freak.
Oh, yeah.
That was his therapy, dude. What? Like vacuuming. He got 6 a.m. on Sunday in my room. I go, dude, don't vacuum.
Oh, between that and like cleaning the garage, it's like everything that my parents taught me that I hated when I was young set me up to live the life that I live now. Because
isn't that crazy, huh?
Well, yeah, because without that, I would go.
There's enough chaos in our life to not have it in your house, right?
Well, yeah, it just having something to do.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, sure.
And,
yeah.
And like the gym, it's a huge thing.
Yeah.
You know, like I can't live without doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that having discipline in such an undisciplined career, I think
sure.
is
yeah.
Is
yeah. Bradford
paramount.
Has no idea. He's never seen the inside of a gym.
No.
Ever.
No. I like being outside.
Drinking.
There you go. I did that this weekend.
I like being in a cabana.
Outdoor bars.
FabFitFun is a women's lifestyle subscription box filled with
full size
premium beauty, lifestyle, fitness, home, and wellness products set straight to your doorstep each season.
And we are coming into a new season.
My favorite season.
Oh, my gosh. And that's what so what I love about the switch to the seasons is the new clothes and new things that you get to bring out, whether you store it in a box or in your garage. But you also need to get new stuff, right?
Yeah, well.
And sometimes you don't know
What's
on trend?
Right.
What are the people wearing for the fall? And the great thing about FabFitFun is that they're plugged in to the trends. They know all the things.
And they send you a beautiful fall box full of
great goodies. It's like your best friend that knows you so well sending you a box of treats.
That's right. Yeah, this fall box is a perfect way to treat yourself and transition you from summer to the cozy fall.
Whoop, whoop. Some of the highlights from this fall. Products from Aveda, Human in Kind, Kate Spade, Anthropology. But the cool thing is you can customize your box, right? So you can always take the chance because everything you know you're going to get is awesome. But if you like to customize, if you don't like to be surprised, they will let you customize your box. So it is truly your box. So, but remember, guys, these boxes, every time they switch to a new season, these boxes sell out. So make sure to sign up for yours today. And listeners of That's Awesome get $10 off their first box at FabFitFun.com and enter That's Awesome at checkout. And these boxes, Steven.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm getting serious here.
Yeah.
These boxes, Steven. The value of the products inside the box
are way more.
It's over $200.
I know. It's amazing. It's such a great little
sometimes
gift.
Sometimes they're over $300.
Treat yourself, ladies.
It's so good. It's so good, guys. Oh, my God.
All right, I'm doing it. I'm getting my wife the fall box.
Yes, it's amazing. FabFitFun.com. Enter That's Awesome at checkout for $10 off your first box. $39.99 for a box full of treats. Come on! Are you still in class? Do you still when you're not working? How do you feed the creative side?
Well, you know, so I was in a band called the Cowboy Killers, and we were really working, and we were working hard.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It was great. Unfortunately, we had to put it aside because I just didn't have enough hours in the day between
sure.
doing this gig yeah. and being a single dad.
Yeah.
It was impossible. And then we were about to go in and start making a record, and then we were starting to line tour dates up to open for some really wonderful people.
Wow, that's amazing, dude.
It was wonderful, but I looked at it and I was like, "There's, I can't, I don't know how I'm going to do this.
Yeah,
I can't go on the road. I can't leave here.
No,
I can't. I couldn't. It got to a point where it was unsustainable.
Well, it'll always be there. It'll always be there for you.
Yeah, yeah, right? It will. It was. I don't like to do anything though. I
half-ass?
Never.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it 120%.
That's the tough thing with music. And, you know, because we did a little bit of it with a band that was kind of a cover band that we just took out for the entertainment of our viewers, basically, or that's how it started. And, yeah, when you look at the logistics of like, okay, how do we lean more into that? What does that entail? It's just time and travel.
Oh.
And there's no – even if you were to make it big, it's still so much time and travel – that if you're an actor, like, unless you're Jared Leto, I don't know how you do it. You don't.
You got to establish in one or the other first.
Yeah.
If you're a singer-songwriter and you're Chris Stapleton, you know, then you can go do whatever you want.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know, or if you're Jared Leto, you can go form 30 Seconds to Mars. You can go do that. And, you know, if you're caught kind of right in the middle, it's really difficult to define yourself as one or the other. And you have to make a choice. And it's funny because I used to have a buddy. And he would go, "So what do you want to do? You want to be an actor or you want to be a singer?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm going to do both. I'm going to do it all." And he's like, "Can you do that?" And he was asking me when I was in my 20s. And I was like, "I can do anything I want." But he's right.
Right.
And it was like, you gotta make a choice to what you want to devote yourself to. And then once you establish that, then you can kind of go off and do your own thing. That's how I personally see it. But,
Little side thing. Do you have a voiceover? Do you do voiceovers?
I don't.
You should.
I would love to.
You should. Yeah.
You should.
Got a great voice.
Thanks, brother.
I want you to sell me a Lexus. Like
I could probably do that.
That's awesome.
Do you know what I mean? You just have that. I don't know. You just have that like trustworthy voice, like authoritative, but like warm.
Mm.
But I know stuff.
Oh, I love you.
And let me tell you about it.
Voice. Oh, this is amazing. I'm going to come to your room more often, Steve.
Well, this is therapy, dude.
This is therapy.
Yeah, we have a self-esteem school.
You
walk
guys
out of here.
Awesome.
You walk out of here going, "Man, I'm the man." Sign me up for the next podcast.
Oh, no, it's true.
But, you know, dude, it's like you want to it's cool to be able to do this because you get to have conversations with people and recognize the great positives that people have.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That you don't really get to tell people these things. And you know, if you have a good scene, I'll be, "Hey, dude, that was a good scene. Good job." You know, but you don't get to really say, "Hey, man, I see that you're busting your ass. I see that you're given everything all the time and you're freaking doing it and you're here, you're on time, you're doing everything right." You know what I mean? So it's good. It's nice to be able to tell somebody that, you know, because not many people, you don't get a chance to do that a lot of times.
Yeah, you know, that's highly appreciated. And I really appreciate that too, because, you know, man, just a little pat on the back every now and again.
Sure.
You
know? I know.
That was a great story of Burt Reynolds. He was doing this voiceover thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were running him ragging. And they're like, the producer was like, "So, Burt, what do you need?" And Burt just said, "You know what? Stick your head in every now and again and say, 'Good job, Burt. You're killing it, Burt.' That's what I need."
Yeah.
And that's Burt Reynolds telling
Burt Reynolds.
You. That's Burt telling you that. That's amazing.
Man. Yeah, and that's all we have. I mean, really, in this thing, it's such a – that's all you got. You got the people that you work with in this circus, you know?
Totally.
And it's – that's why I always wonder why the doors aren't open. So I always keep my door open.
So right.
Everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a collective.
I think back there where you are is great because you can keep the door open.
Yeah.
Because
this is hard.
This is hard here because in and out, everybody's in and out, in and out, in and out. But you're right. I mean, you know, we're kind of all in this thing together. So
yeah, I want to start. I want to start Margarita Mondays.
Oh yeah, that's great.
He's Thirsty Thursday, Margarita Mondays.
Boom,
dude,
it's amazing.
We can find a drink for every day.
Oh, I can help with that.
So, yeah.
So what's been kind of character wise for you as Shiloh? What's been the toughest kind of thing to navigate through?
You know. Some of the physicality of it, the predatory nature.
Interesting.
I have no experience in that. I have nothing to relate it to.
Good, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's great. But like there, you know, some of the scenes that we did with Sam and when I got all rapey, it made me highly uncomfortable.
Sure.
And it was like, oh, you're gonna, really?
You just guys? Gotta go for it.
Yeah, you gotta.
I mean.
I don't even know. I mean, I was like, a virgin on prom night. I didn't know what to do. I was how does it work?
Yeah.
That's been difficult to navigate.
That's an interesting, I guess, insight. I wouldn't think about that because obviously you're not a predator in real life.
Yeah.
But there is a physicality to one.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So that's interesting to me.
I watched it's funny because my daughter was watching like one of those big cat shows. And we were watching it together.
Like the fishing shows?
No, like the cat. Like the cat, like the lions.
And it was big cat. Yeah, I think it was like, big catch.
Yeah.
And I was like,
oh, no. Like cat.
Okay, I'm with you. Yeah.
So it was like Richard Attenborough, and was like, if you can watch this apex predator find its prey. And I was watching it, and I was watching how it moved. And all of a sudden, I caught myself like rolling my shoulders like this cat. And my daughter's like, What are you doing? Like, Daddy, nothing, Daddy, nothing. Daddy. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm going to use this for this guy, the way he moves.
Yeah, interesting.
Man. Yeah. That was the thing that was the most difficult, was trying to figure out a way to slip into that type of
just
mindset and mentality.
Yeah.
You know?
Has any of your friends or family been watching you as this character?
Yeah.
Yeah,
a lot.
Has that been people go, oh, wow, I didn't know you had that in you? Or like, wow, you're really creepy. Good job, Kobe.
Well, kind of. My aunt was like, I don't like you. It's kind of gross. I was like, well, yeah, you know.
Hey.
She's like, good on you. You got a job, though. Keep working.
Yeah, the check's clearing.
Yeah, totally. You know what's really interesting has been the fan reaction. People love it. And I don't, it's really odd. And I'll hop in there and throw elbows on Instagram. And
sure.
I actually try to talk.
Yeah.
Because
I
think the one thing that kind of scares me is I don't want to be seen as this individual. So if, like, if I don't reach out and have conversations, people will never know.
Well, that's what's great about this is not all the fans are listening, but they'll get insight to the good guy that you really are. Because when, you know, people went crazy when we introduced him at the General Hospital Fan Club weekend. It was kind of a mix of like, yeah, why am I cheering for this guy? What am I doing? Yeah, there's Silo. Oh,
ew.
But it was amazing because you're so good at what you do. And I think the fans appreciate that.
Well, I mean, you know, the word presence is something that gets thrown around a lot in our business, whether it's TV or theater, whatever. But people are attracted and curious about a presence, and you and your character certainly have that, right? So it's, God, it's either, why am I drawn to that which scares me? Why is it fascinating to me? He's got something, and, so I think you create energy.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, it's fascinating.
It is.
Because you're right.
Everyone
has strong feelings about Shiloh.
Yeah.
Whatever those feelings are,
they're polarizing. It's a polarizing character.
It is. Yeah. It's big because there's been a lot of bad guys on the show. And none quite like.
Well, yeah, we've been very lucky between you and Chloe in the last. Because there are villains that are kind of cast as
almost
generic villains.
Or cartoonish.
Right.
In a way,
and they're set up, they're brought on the show to specifically be the polar to somebody and be that for a while, right? And then it's very easy to just sneak into the mustache twisting kind of like, oh, I'm just the bad guy, but what do I actually want?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll... And when there is something that is actually bad, they play against the unlikable part,
because
it's easy to fall into those traps and you haven't, and that's awesome.
Well, I think one of the easiest things is knowing who you're working with.
Yeah.
So it's like when I work with you, there are certain things that I always love to try to get a reaction out of you, and every now and again. I hope I hit a nerve because every now and again you get so deadly still and look at me like, I'm going to kill this guy.
He goes, dude, you got that stare down.
I'm like
the first couple of days, he's like, dude, you got that stare down. He said, yeah, it's my one look, bitch.
But I like, there's a lot of times he goes for me and I'm like, man, I really want to be able to use these words on this page to make Steve Burton really want to grab me by the throat and smack my head against a wall.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, there you go. And it's finding little ways.
You know, I found interesting about this thing is that I was upstate. We were working one day, and I was trying to rehearse with somebody right before that dreaded countdown, and she was doing this in her head, and I was literally standing right here, but she was looking right at me, but doing it in her head, and I said, "Let's just run it." She goes, "I can't. I just let me." And I'm like, "Okay." All right, she's like, and basically it was like, I have no time to connect with you. I've got something planned out in my head. I gotta go. I gotta run with that.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it was really, it was a trippy thing.
Yeah.
But when you can actually look somebody in the eye and go, oh, I hear this thing in their voice, or I see this thing in the way that they move, or ooh, that you know,
well, nothing
caused a reaction. Then yeah, you just
nothing organic is gonna happen.
Yeah, isn't it? But isn't that interesting though? And we're acting, right? And we're supposed to connect as people, right?
Right.
And there's, because every show has those type of actors.
Oh, yeah.
Who the line's the same no matter what. You could smack them in the face. They're going to say the line the same way as they
said
it. Well,
in your face is the page of words. They see the words on your face.
Oh, I've done that. I've been there, too.
Yeah. We've like, yeah. But it's interesting because connecting is really what we're supposed to do and all we have.
Well,
and
that's the joy.
Yeah, and it's so strange that there are actors that don't really do that.
Well,
they have their performance is fine,
sure,
but it's planned, right?
Oh, yeah,
it's planned. I don't try to plan anything,
yeah,
ever, you know.
Yeah, you can know your given circumstances, know what you're supposed to try to get. But beyond that, you can just play. And the one thing that we've always talked about, you know, we talked about a lot with people on the podcast is one thing that's really cool about soaps is that a lot of the relationships are established,
mm-hmm.
right? So and. You can go into a scene, and if you know who your scene partner is and it's someone that you have an established relationship with, there's not a whole lot of work you need to do besides knowing what you're trying to get
mm-hmm.
because the relationship is so clearly defined. Like, when he talks to you, he knows exactly how he feels about you.
Yeah.
The audience knows exactly how he feels about you. So it you can kind of, as long as you know what you're saying, you can kind of just wade into those waters and – the work has already been done, a lot of it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And so that's what's cool about this daily serial is that we get to play in that same defined space. And so therefore, we don't have to answer those same, like, a whole litany of questions every scene.
Yeah.
Because those questions have long been answered. And there's some freedom in that, right?
And a lot of times the hurdle is because you get 50 pages in a day.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm just trying to make it through 30
yeah.
of these pages, like, good. And then the last 20, I'm going to have to go, oh, right before. I mean, there's times where you have 50, 60 pages. You can't possibly remember that much dialogue
sure.
and be amazing every time.
Yeah.
It's kind of the deck is stacked against you sometimes. But, you know, it's what we do, and it's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that you can have those scenes and connect with people. That's what we do, man.
I look at all this stuff as having something in your toolbox. You know, every gig that you do, every job that you have, there's a new set of skills that's just there waiting to be learned.
Yes.
And this is one of the, really is one of the greatest things that I think any actor could ever do.
Yeah.
And I would tell any actor who's getting into this line of work to get in here, man. I used to race cars. And
wait a minute. Oh, you used to race cars?
I did. I wrecked everything that I ever touched from 16 to 18. And finally, my parents were like, you're going to kill yourself or somebody else. And they're like, what do you want for your birthday? And I said, I want to go to racing school. They're like, oh, done. Okay.
Wow.
So I went to this place called Bertil Rouge.
Were you just a bad driver?
No, I was nuts. I was just fast. I was always fast.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter you said, I like fast things.
Oh, a lover of everything fast. It's true. I have a bad Porsche habit that I've had since I was a kid. You know, I've gone through 22 cars. Like I'm really big into it. And I went and I did this little weekend thing at something called the Pro Saab Series. And then I really took to it. And then I came back and I would do lapping days in the cars. And then I kept getting consistently faster and better. And finally, somebody said, you should come race this series. And I was scouted to race the Pro Saab Series. And I did that. And then I started moving up the ranks, and I got as far as Indy Lights, and just wasn't fast enough. They scared me. I couldn't make the mental. There's a mental disconnect that you have to make in order to drive something like that, and I just couldn't do it. So
how fast were the cars going in the Pro Saab series?
Pro Sob series, they were little 2 liters. They were fast enough. It was more just about consistency. You had a lot of.
It was in a road track.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
And they were the first kind of downforce cars that I had driven. And they started you off on street tires, and then they'd move you to slicks. And once you went to slicks, it was a whole different deal. And it was interesting because you move up in stages. Now, where a lot of people start is go-karts. Yeah. And I'd never touched a kart before. And so I'd gone through, I had raced the Ferrari Challenge Series, and then I went to the Porsche Super Cup and did that. And then I stopped to concentrate on being an actor. But I would go up and I would coach up at Willow Springs or Button Willow or wherever. And one day a buddy of mine, he was at the kart track at Willow, and he said, "Yo, I just got this new shifter. You should come over and try it, new shifter kart." So I went over expecting, you know, and there I am. I was testing a new Porsche RSR with a client that I had worked with, and I thought, you know, I'm hot shit, and you know, I got my Porsche suit on and all my gear and shit, and I walk up to the go-kart track. There's a bunch of 10-year-olds, and I'm like, kidding? And I get in this cart, and I promptly get my ass handed to me by a bunch of 10-year-old children.
Wow.
But like lap by lap, I just got smaller and smaller and smaller, and I got in my head, and I got worse and worse and worse. And I pulled in, and my buddy was like, wow. It's like, oh.
Well, I thought you could race.
Oh, wow, I was so bad. Yeah, but it's like starting off there is where you really should start. And because you know, you pick up so many bad habits. It's even like being an actor. You can do things and pick up so many bad habits. And to bring it back to this is like the karting version of acting.
Interesting.
You get in here and you just have to be sharp and go. Yeah. And it's the same thing with that.
Wow. Yeah. So when did you gave up driving? Was it around the time that you had a kid? Or
No, I stopped. I remember it very vividly. It was 2000 and... No, I guess it was 1999 or 2000, and I was selling Porsches at a dealership in Woodland Hills.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was. I should write a movie about that. It was insane. And this guy, this French guy named Georges Delaloy, had come into town, and he had built a hot rod Porsche Boxster, and it was when the Boxster first came out. And he came, and he was coming to dealerships in order to have them sell his aftermarket stuff, his parts.
Yeah.
And he comes up to me, and I was the only guy who would talk to him. So he went out in this hot rod Boxster that he had. It had a 911 motor in it, and it was really fast, and it was a lot of fun. And he was talking about racing and what he did and how he works and his company. And he said, "Gooby, I would like to have you as a West Coast distributor. I think we would have a lot of fun." And I said, "You know, George, I'm a driver. That's what I really want to do." He goes, "Why didn't you say so?" He goes, "You come with me, come back to Paris, and you tire test for me and Porsche. I pay you not a lot of money, say $2,000 a month, and live with me and my girlfriend." And I was like, "Really?" And he's like, yeah, it'd be a great time. And I didn't do it. I wanted to be an actor. And wow. It was like, you know, it was one of those things where
it was a crossroad.
It was a crossroad.
That was a crossroad right there.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, I do I either fulfill my dreams or become part of a threesome? That sounded more like a lifestyle choice.
Yeah. I didn't even realize it at 20 years old. I was like
what?
Wow,
live with you and your girlfriend?
Yeah, yeah. Go be a lot of fun.
Say how you say ménage à toi.
Naki, the champagne all over your body.
Grab my baguette.
Yeah, play with my baguette.
McGuffin's yams, they'd be great. Wow, okay, wow. So, but
yeah, we went there.
That's the French Shiloh.
Yeah. Maui.
Yeah, that's your inspiration.
Oh,
for you.
Man. That's
but
amazing,
so cars are still a big part of your life, though.
Oh, huge. Yeah, huge. Yeah. I don't play like I used to play, and when I had a kid, yeah.
Well, I mean,
I definitely started slowing down.
Do all your cars at least have most for? Up to now has had like a car seat or a booster seat in them, right?
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So he has a 911 with a car seat in it.
Oh, yeah. I have.
Do you?
I did.
Oh, that's so funny, dude.
I sold it. But, yeah, I would throw a car seat in the turbo all the time. And now she's big enough where she can, like, sit in the front like it's a big deal.
Yeah.
But awesome. I still get those glares from, like, parents. And they're just like, oh, God.
She's not big enough.
How could you? It's like, dude, I grew up in the 70s. Like, you know, my mother smoked and there was
It's just so ridiculous. Right. So, because, well, I had Brooklyn in the car and yeah. She'll, before, year ago, whatever, she'll buckle herself, you know, the chest, the buckle one, but not the lower one sometimes. If we're going to the store or whatever, I'm like, whatever.
Right.
I put it on Instagram. She should have the bottom buckle on.
4 points.
I go, dude.
My mom chain smoked in a lead paint room with asbestos, shag carpet, and no ventilation.
Yeah.
And here I am.
And just ate butter and drank.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Totally. I know, man. Awesome, dude.
Hey.
So cool.
Wow. So what is your daughter into?
She doesn't want to be an actor.
Huzzah. Yes. You're a good parent.
She does not want to be an actor. She wants to be a singer. She's like, Daddy, I'm going to be in a band like you. And I'm like,
Damn it. I'm in.
I'm like, no, go. Like, I think that's great.
Yes. Can she sing?
Oh, dude, she kills it.
Dude, awesome.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, she's
so cool.
She's really good. I have a video of when we were, my band and I at the time were working on this song, and when we would work stuff, we, of course, you know, you know how it works when you're writing something. You play it, you write it, you get it right, and then you move, you know, how we would do it, we'd move on, we'd do another verse. Yeah. And so we were rehearsing this one tune, and we finally got it down, and we were all singing it because we would do a lot of three-part harmony stuff. And then she just came in, and she sang it with us.
Dude, got chills. It's amazing.
On.
That's so cute.
And I was like, wow. And then
you guys should sing something, and you should put it online a little bit.
Yeah.
That'd be cool, dude.
Yeah. I've got a couple of those things.
You should, man.
You know,
it's awesome.
It's an interesting thing in this world now, especially with social media. I don't necessarily know how to navigate with my life and work life and putting stuff. Like I was talking to my girlfriend, and I have a lot of stuff of my daughter online.
Sure.
She's like, is that safe? And I never thought of it.
Yeah, I know.
Somebody sent me a fan request, like a piece of fan mail, to my address.
Yeah.
Like, how the fuck did you get my address?
Oh, that's easy.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Zoinks.
You know?
Yeah, I know.
There's a line there.
But, once your kid's on there, it's on there. There's no getting it off. Like,
well, yeah.
I mean, unless you just get off social media altogether.
You can't do that.
You can't.
There was one point where, you know, someone had started an account under my daughter's name and was pretending to be her. And so, like, those things.
Really?
Let me find that person.
Yeah.
I'll help you.
For you.
You know, so that was something that we kind of, you know, stopped. But yeah, no, because I respect the people that keep their kids completely off of it. I get that, but you know, I think part of what I enjoy about social media is that, like, letting people in sharing with, and
totally,
obviously our kids are a big part of our lives, and you know, I try not to put anything that is that would embarrass my kid later.
Oh, I love doing that. I do that all the time.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean, though? Like,
we're not good dads.
Yeah, no, we're terrible.
But it is a weird thing. Yeah. So are you still writing music a lot? Like, is that something that is just part of your constant creativity when you're, like, if things that are just trying to get out of you or songs inside you all the time that are trying to get out, or what?
No, you know, I don't play an instrument that I can write on. I don't play guitar or piano. So I've been really blessed in the sense with musically that I always find people to help me do that. I've gotten to a place, though, where, you know, I hated standing still, and I would fill my days up with so much stuff that it wouldn't even allow me to take a break. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even sit. And it was funny because it was the antithesis of my younger life when I would just sit and meditate and just have time. And now I would fill my days up where I would just be exhausted. So I had to take a step back from it.
Yeah.
And it was like, there's certain things that I need to, you know, just I need to be able to have a moment where I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
And the Dutch have a word for it. It's called Nixon. And it's, they do nothing. And it's literally the art for doing nothing for not extended periods of time, but 30 minutes. You don't do shit. You just chill out. Like Saturday, my girlfriend and I were down in Temecula for my buddy's 50th birthday. And Saturday, we literally woke up, made breakfast. I had a Bloody Mary, and I sat in the pool for 6 hours. We did nothing, and it was
amazing.
And she was like, "Do you realize we did nothing today?" And I'm like, "It was amazing."
Yeah, that is.
I couldn't. It was so hard for me to actually even allow myself to do that.
Yeah.
So
that sounds nice.
It was.
It does sound great. Well, it is. It's, you know, it's, there's this whole wave of now disconnecting, right?
Yeah.
Because we're all so connected. Now it's, hey, put everything down and disconnect.
Sure.
Or just talk to people. It's like, well, you know, my phone died.
That's
on
true.
Friday night. It died. Like, it would not turn on. And I was like, for a moment, I had a moment of panic that I was going to miss out. Of course, I didn't miss out on anything and nothing happened. And it was joyous.
Yeah,
because as much as connected as we've become, there is such a human disconnect.
100%.
Right.
Yes.
Well, and on the weekend, if you don't have any work and you're with the people that you need to talk to, like, i.e., your girlfriend or your daughter or wherever, like, what else could you need?
Well, one would think that.
Yeah.
You know, there's a constant. It's that constant, though. I was like, I almost go to my phone, like, you
but,
know,
but now
a smoker will smoke a cigarette.
Oh, sure. We all do. But now it has to, it's almost, it has to be a conscious decision to do this. When we grew up, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. We were, you know, what, however you grew up, but you were with your family. You did family stuff. You didn't have an iPhone in the car to be playing games on or be, you know, distracted by. You had to connect with people. You know,
I do remember that sadness, though, of thinking, God, there was a big, I'm sure there, you know, fear of missing out is not something that has gone away because of cell phones. Still, people feel like they're missing out on things, but being at home, not knowing where the people that you wanted to be with
were, like what your friends
and
are doing,
certainly doing something that I'm not a part of, and I can't. So I'd drive around to, like, the McDonald's where people hung out, the docks where people might be, just looking for connection, right?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, if you're at home and the phone's not ringing, and you,
it's kind of great.
It is now. It's kind of great. I'm just like, wow.
When I get no texts or emails, I'm like, yes!
I know. And,
it's amazing!
And then I call you, sorry.
And then, that's fine. You're my second wife. I don't care. That's fine.
Man, well, it's so nice to get to know you. And
yeah, man. Thank you.
This was a true pleasure, guys.
Thank you for taking the time to do this.
Thank
you
for having me.
A little early today.
Not at all. This was a blast, guys. Thank you
so
much.
I know that the fans appreciate it too, because they get the real insight on who you are, and, you know, you're just a great guy, a great actor.
Thanks, man.
And it's been a pleasure, you know, working with you here, and it's awesome that you're kicking so much ass.
Where can people find you online?
You can find me, Kobe Ryan McLaughlin, on Instagram. I'm not huge on the Facebook.
Instagram and Twitter, right?
Instagram and Twitter, yeah. Twitter. Kobe Ryan 74 at Twitter, and Kobe Ryan McLaughlin on Instagram. That's where you can find me. I'm there all the time.
Cool, awesome, man.
Awesome, brother.
Well, we're glad
Please
you're here.
Post you and your daughter singing.
Oh, I will.
I want to see something, man.
Done.
I want to see
I'll it. Actually find that clip, because I have
it. Yeah, please. Cool.
You got it.
So awesome.
Fellas, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, bud.
Appreciate you.
See ya.
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a TrueCar cash offer.
Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions, get the answers you need, so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride.
So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.
If you like our show, you're going to love The Hollywood Filter on Podcast One.
Join Jessica Hall and Mel Lamprey as they peel back the filter and see what's really going on in Hollywood. From top LA beauty trends to events and celebrity goings-on, get a glimpse of the unfiltered Hollywood that you rarely see. You thought you knew LA, but do you?
Download new episodes of The Hollywood Filter every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.